From Madison, Wisconsin, World Dairy Expo presents The Dairy Show, the digital meeting place of the global dairy industry, where we sit down to talk cows, cutting-edge technology, and the colored shavings.
Welcome to The Dairy Show. I am your host, Lisa Benke. You know, a trip to World Dairy Expo is always a chance to meet with people that you know and respect and would like to know more about. The Dairy Show does just that on those precious days during the year when we can't be gathered together in Madison, Wisconsin. Today's guest is someone who simply has chosen a career based on her love for cows. Today's guest has an extensive list of extracurriculars. She was on a winning collegiate dairy cattle judging team. She was a two-sport collegiate athlete. She's an accomplished seamstress, is a cancer survivor, and avid biker. This guest was our 2012 World Dairy Expo Industry Person of the Year, and in 2019 was made the honorary Klusendorf Award winner. She also serves on our National Dairy Shrine Board and is a participant in the Hellenbrand Lasting Legacy Award Committee, is a 40-year member of World Dairy Expo's volunteer force, and was the 1998 Friend of Expo. Our guest today also has a string of professional accomplishments. A professor emeritus of large animal internal medicine and food animal production medicine, the 2018 Merck Animal Health and American Association of Bovine Practitioners Veterinary Mentor of the Year, and a two-time Wisconsin Veterinary Medicine Veterinarian of the Year. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome to today's show someone who's been fondly referred to as the Mother Teresa of Expo. Welcome, Sheila McGurk, to The Dairy Show.
Thank you, Lisa. It's really a pleasure to be here, and I really am going to enjoy chatting with you about World Dairy Expo.
Well, Sheila, anyone who's had a chance to get 5 minutes of your time has left with having learned something. Your wealth of experience and your love of life and your love of dairy cows has knit together a career that is so admirable, but also so beneficial to the industry. I think what I'd like to do this morning is start with, you know, you're growing up in Maryland. Tell us about that. You're a farm girl.
Interestingly, I am one of 14 siblings. So my family of 15 moved to Maryland when I was just two. I'm the sixth oldest. My father, a businessman, joined an agricultural business in Maryland, which prompted the move from Long Island, New York to Maryland. And he wanted to be in the country. So he bought a dairy farm and started that registered Jersey farm with a partner. So the partner was the dairyman. My father was the businessman, but quickly put his efforts to learning the dairy cattle business. Eventually, he bought his partner out and really took the love of raising registered Jersey cows. We had imported cows. We had bulls and bull studs. And with John Stiles, he and John created the All Jersey Queen of Quality Milk Market in Maryland. Eventually, our small Jersey farm of about 72 Jersey cows went on to be house a milk processing facility. And we processed milk right on the dairy and had trucks that delivered bottles of milk, eggnog seasonally, to farms in our county. The Jersey business and farm thrived until we had a lightning fire when I was a teenager. After the lightning fire, thankfully, none of the cattle were injured. They had just been turned out at night, so no damage to the cattle. We had to move the cattle to a different farm for milking, and that ended up prompting a sale of the whole herd to one of the partners that my father had bred cows with to New Jersey. And after the sale of the Jerseys, I kept my show cattle at home and continued with those cattle for a few more years and continued to show and judge. But ultimately, we ended up moving from registered Jersey cattle to a cow-calf operation, and that took over the operation.
I was thinking about that. 14 kids, you all had a role in the farm, I'm assuming. And you clearly had an interest in the cattle. Did your brothers and sisters as well? Or were you kind of a standout in that regard?
Two of us really took on the farming business. My oldest brother, Mike, had a love of the farm, the equipment, the crops. And he went on to major in ag engineering at Cornell. I had a love of the cows, unparalleled by any of my siblings. I had a few other siblings who were into horses and things like that, but I was the only one who was passionate about the cows.
You pursued veterinary medicine. At what age? When did you know that you wanted to pursue veterinary medicine?
At a very young age, I was involved with cattle, even in grammar school. As soon as I was allowed, I was helping get the cows into the barn, putting straps on for milking and doing things like that. But I was really, really interested whenever the farm veterinarian was at the farm, and incredibly interested in sort of the science and the practicality of taking care of sick cows, and wanted, I would say by fourth grade, I was convinced I wanted to be a veterinarian.
So what steps then did you take to make that happen? As one of 14 kids, did most of your brothers and sisters pursue college careers? Your brother went to Cornell. You followed in his footsteps.
Yes. To be a veterinarian at that time, there were some challenges. And by the time I got to high school, I realized that the magnitude of challenges for a female interested in large animal veterinary medicine were going to be pretty big. So just growing up on a farm wasn't going to be credentials enough to get into what was then only 19 veterinary schools and colleges in North America. So I started beyond my own family farm. I started to gain experience from working with a veterinarian and a veterinarian who did both large and small animals. I worked with another veterinarian who worked with horses. So I made my experience, not just the dairy experience from the farm, but traveling with the veterinarians and seeing, you know, what was ahead. I did go to Cornell. Cornell was one of those schools that had a veterinary college with it. Maryland did not at that time. And so I thought, following in my brother's footsteps, going to Cornell, majoring in animal science, dairy science, or biology at Cornell would be a sure, clear path to veterinary school.
And it must have proved so.
As you asked me about once before, it had its challenges. So the challenges that I faced, that with a limited number of veterinary schools, a lot of the states that had a school had contracts with other states to allow applicants from other states. The worst part of this was that at Cornell, I realized that I was not going to get into Cornell as a Maryland resident. Being an undergrad, I did work at Cornell, but I could not establish a New York residency. And so I was, as a Maryland resident, Cornell had New York residents accepted, and they accepted students from the New England states, but not from Maryland. But my undergraduate career was terrific at Cornell. I loved it. So I finished my undergraduate career, got my Bachelor of Science at Cornell, and then applied to the schools that Maryland, the state of Maryland, had contracts with. So the University of Georgia, Ohio State had contracts to accept limited number of Maryland students, 10 to 12 Maryland students. And then, of course, there was the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine, which was a private school, and I could apply to that school. There were, at that time, when I was applying to veterinary school, there were 15 qualified applicants for every single one accepted. So 15 to 1. You had to have an extraordinarily superb grade point average, which I was not in that elite group. I had worked, I played sports. So for me to, I had to work hard to maintain a 3.0 GPA. And we were looking at schools that wanted 3.5 and higher. Thankfully, when I applied to the University of Georgia, they interviewed me and found out that I was interested in large animals. And my interview went smoothly. And at that time, I was accepted to Georgia and I could pay in-state tuition. And they appreciated the fact that a female was interested in large animal medicine. So that there were many challenges to get there. But it was, I really arrived and had a great veterinary school experience.
I wanted to ask you about that. You mentioned to yourself, as we're talking about challenges, there were but 19 at that point in time. And I have to imagine that there weren't a lot of women sitting next to you in those classes. How many women were pursuing a veterinary career at that point?
In my class, I hate to say it, but I was the class of 1977 graduating from veterinary school. And we were the first class to go from 5 women to, I think, my class, we started with 12 women. So there were a limited number of females in veterinary school at that time.
Launching forward to today's complexion of the classroom, how many more women do you see in the classroom? What is the ratio nowadays of men to women?
I think as you look across now, there are 35, 36 schools in North America, and the ratio now is much closer to 80% female as you look across all colleges. So the gender has definitely shifted.
Well, this is something we'll talk about a little bit later, too, because I am keen to know when you talk about that many more vet schools and now we've got that many more women engaged as well. It is curious to me that we are experiencing what you would call, I would say, a large animal vet shortage. We'll get to that later, though, because I still want to back up and hear more about your career. You started out in Maryland, and I know you. If you're going to do something, you're going to do it well. I'm sure everybody listening is curious. A two-sport athlete on top of, you know, working to get into vet school. Tell us about those two sports that you excelled at. You played in college.
I played basketball and I played tennis in college. You can imagine with 15 siblings living on a farm, that the breaks between doing chores, we were engaged in all sorts of sports. And that day and age, it was, you didn't focus on one sport. You played touch football in the cow pastures, and then you retired outside to where the basketball hoop was and shot baskets. And you went to the nearest tennis court and banged the tennis ball around and numerous other, ice skating, you did it all. So when I went to Cornell, I decided to, you had to do some sports testing to get your gym requirements. And at that point in time, what I did is I tried out for the basketball team and was accepted in basketball on the team. I was at 5'10", one of the taller athletes. Having played against brothers, I was pretty fearless. And I could shoot pretty well. Same thing in tennis. Again, I had plenty of practice. Number of my siblings played good tennis, and I was, being the sixth, pretty competitive and didn't like to lose. So that's how my sport careers started.
I'm sure it didn't hurt that you CrossFit as a kid with a professional athlete. Sheila, could you tell us about your famous neighbor?
Yes. On the farm, we had a rental house. And my father was made aware of one of the Baltimore Colts wanted to live in the country because he and his wife had a dog and he came from the country and wanted to be in the country. So during the football season, Tom Gilbert, the punter of the Baltimore Colts, and when I was a teenager, rented that property. And I became, as he stayed with the Colts, I became the babysitter of their children. And I am connected with them. Their two grandsons have played football at the University of Wisconsin. So the circle is great. Tom had to be very careful. We adored him, the punter, but he had to make sure he wasn't injured. So we would play walking tackle football in the cow pastures with Tom. Tom weighed 245 pounds, and all of us would be on his legs trying to get him down, and he would just walk down the field, dragging us kids behind him. When he you know, punters don't get a lot of publicity, but on talk shows, if he had the opportunity, he would tell us all he was going to pull his ear as a signal to say hello to all of us. And of course, we would just melt in adoration of him. So that sports connection for me meant so much. The reconnection recently with his two grandchildren here from the East Coast playing football has been an extraordinary payback.
So while at Cornell, you had no problem meeting your Phy Ed requirements as a two-sport athlete. You also carved out time to be on the college's award-winning dairy judging team, and you earned your undergraduate degree. And that positioned you for vet school. So tell us about that journey, about being admitted to vet school, and did you wind up practicing veterinary medicine?
This is where what came of my plans sort of was totally remade. After finishing veterinary school, I had planned to go back to the mixed practice that I worked in, and I was going to be the large animal, start to do a lot of the large animal, the dairy, especially the dairy and the cattle work. The person who hired me and was the owner of the practice wanted to specialize more in equine and in small animal, but he wanted me there. So during my fourth year of veterinary school, we had some new faculty large animal clinician teachers who told me, you know what, we think you should think about doing an internship. And internships aren't required in veterinary medicine. You know, you graduate from 4 years of veterinary school, you're like a family practitioner, you go straight into practice. But an internship seemed like a great opportunity. So I applied to Ontario Veterinary College and got an internship in large animal medicine and surgery. It was in Guelph. It was an extraordinary experience. I knew of the Canadian cattle. During that year, I went to the Royal. It was just enormous. I was surrounded by teaching faculty who really pushed me to make more of veterinary medicine. I had students in the hospital who were always asking questions. And I found out that I really loved being pushed, being surrounded by people who made me ask questions. Students who asked me, I had to explain things. And I really bit into this love of teaching. And from there, I decided instead of going back to practice, I would do a residency. And so that took me to Ohio State. And then I stayed to get an advanced degree. And I never went back to the practice.
At some point, too, I know that you married and had a family, too, amidst all of this career building. At what point did that enter into the mix?
It, again, was a major upheaval in what I had planned. But I had met a really good group of friends in Ontario. And during that time, I was in a group of which my husband was part of this group. We did a lot of things together, outdoor activities. We all went our different paths after Ontario. Only in 1985, one of my colleagues from Ontario joined me on the faculty at the University of Wisconsin. And then during that time, my husband came to visit him. And we rehooked up and got married. And so that was 1985. And Paul and I have been together and have three children, and all of them adult children. And in 1985, I started piecing together what is a tenuous balance of career, family, life, but I think in the end, I'm better for it.
Like I said, when you do something, you do it well. And you just, the litany of things that you have accomplished in your life to date are just phenomenal. But let's circle back. You were in Ohio, and there must have been an opportunity in 1982. They're building a new vet school in Madison, Wisconsin, and you caught wind of that. Tell us how your footsteps led you to Wisconsin.
It was an unbelievable tale of events that brought me here. So after leaving my internship at Ontario Veterinary College, my intern supervisor was hired at the University of Wisconsin, the new School of Veterinary Medicine. Interestingly, I had presented a paper on some work I did with him at a Chicago conference for researchers in animal disease. And it wasn't my intern supervisor who contacted me, but the head of the physiology department at the School of Veterinary Medicine, and said, after hearing my paper, said, hey, would you be interested in applying to the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine? I had been to Wisconsin as a tennis player, a junior tennis player, and when I was 16, I'd come out to Beaver Dam for a tennis camp. And when I was out here, I was like, Wisconsin looks like Maryland, rolling hills and dairy cows everywhere. And so when I heard they had a veterinary school, I was like, wow, that could be an opportunity. But I wanted to be a practicing clinician, a veterinarian. So I responded to the invitation to come interview, that my career hope was to be a clinical person and work with animals as well. And within a week, I was invited to be an interview candidate in the Department of Medical Sciences, the chairman of which was my former intern mentor. So I came here for my interview in 1982 in October. The veterinary school wasn't finished. The person who hosted me for my interview had a few interviews lined up in dairy science, but promptly took me to World Dairy Expo and dropped me off. And Dave Dixon was there. I had been competed against Dave's team. He dropped me off at World Dairy Expo to watch the show for most of the day, came and picked me up, and then brought me back for a presentation in dairy science and some meetings. And I thought, boy, this is the place to be. You get to go to World Dairy Expo, you can collaborate with people in dairy science, and the School of Veterinary Medicine looks like it's going to be good. And it was going to be starting its clinical activity in 83, sometime later in 83. So I was hired.
You were hired and began what has been just a monumental career at UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. But also, we talked about that. You've been a friend of Expo for more than 40 years. Sheila, tell us about those first impressions of Expo. And then let us know how you've worked with the show during the course of those 40 years. You know, the things that, how they've changed from the veterinary perspective.
Terry Howard got me organized to be one of the volunteers right off the bat. So I joined the faculty in January of 1983. And so for the World Dairy Expo, 1983 was my first introduction to being a volunteer. I worked mostly with the Holstein Show and Terry, but at that time, World Dairy Expo started becoming the leader in the field of looking at show ring ethics. And as much as udders, it was aging. Do we have scientific evidence of our, you know, calves all in the correct classes with aging? And so Terry, within a year or two, Terry challenged me and Jim Armbruster to start looking at ways of assuring that we had standards, ethical standards that could be backed up by legitimate data. And so the next few years, Jim and I worked on fixing udders, seeing what happened. We got help from a number of people. We looked at milk samples. When Jake Spritt came on the faculty, we started getting more data. And every show, my alternate job besides checking in cattle and working in the show ring was to be, I would participate in mouthing. I would palpate udders at the end of the show of animals that were selected to be examined after the show. So that got me into that part. Then as the show moved on, we went from looking at ethics. I think the next things were that we wanted to make sure biosecurity was a focus of World Dairy Expo. And Bob Kaiser brought that on board. And he and Mark Clark came and said to me, can you help us with biosecurity? Because we need to make sure that the cattle at World Dairy Expo aren't bringing anything in. So with a lot of meetings and things like that, I was able to start getting volunteers from the veterinary school, and we started the process of animal health check-ins that all the cattle would be looked at and their certificates of veterinary inspection would be examined prior to getting them in the barn. So that continues to this day, and we refine it every year. And so that has become now a course for veterinary students. And that has been an extraordinary win-win in my view, because we're always trying to get to circle back. How do we keep veterinarians involved with food animals? And with this animal health check-in involvement, we get first and second and third year veterinary students who may have had no experience seeing cattle ever before. And especially when they sign up for the check-in course in their first and second years, and they see these beautiful cattle and unbelievably interested exhibitors, they look at certificates of veterinary inspection, and all of a sudden they think, wow, maybe I could be involved in food animal veterinary medicine. So that's how I think that's been a sort of a surface look at my roles over the years.
What advice do you have for someone who's considering the field of veterinary medicine as their career?
I encourage people to be interested in veterinary medicine and not to be scared of becoming a large animal or a food animal or a dairy veterinarian, even if they haven't had experiences. I encourage them to avail themselves of opportunity that put them in contact with cattle, horses, wherever their interest is. But beyond that, to recognize that veterinary medicine is part of what we now call one medicine, that even though our patients are four-legged, we have shared science and research and application with our colleagues in human medicine. And so it provides an opportunity to be involved in many, many careers and contribute to the health of animals and people. I would say going into veterinary medicine, the prospective, especially those interested in cattle, need to know, but all veterinary medicine, that we are based in science. We need to have knowledge. We need to be lifelong learners, but we need to be compassionate. We need to listen, we need to be connected, and we have to realize that we are a service profession. So listening, care, connection, compassion, and while many of us focus on saying, well, I'm a horse veterinarian, I'm a cattle veterinarian, I'm a small animal, I'm this veterinarian, I sort of think of we're veterinarians, we take care of pets, we take care of production animals, and we take care of performance animals. And many times they're all worked in together, but especially in the dairy cattle industry and being involved with shows and things like that. These animals that I gave my life to are pets, production, and performance all together. And that is extremely challenging and rewarding.
Sheila, what have been the greatest rewards during your career?
It's no question that it's the people with whom I connect. And that's just a lifelong of repaying, paying it forward to me, but especially with the opportunities that I've had to travel all over the world. I've gone to big farms, little farms. I so enjoy just getting down and working with the people who work with the cattle. I find that challenging, rewarding, connecting, and being in a rural environment, being able to be outside, but also being able to be part of a profession that has really pushed the care of pets, production, and performance animals to its utmost. And I feel like I am a very lucky person to have delivered to animals that this day I could name. I can't wait to see in the show ring when they've been on the colored shavings. I sit up in the stands and the tears just run down my face. So it's a people and an animal experience that have taken me many places. And I feel like it's been a normal thing to be kind of a teacher and a coach, and being led by extraordinary individuals in the field that touches my profession.
Sheila, during your career, you have done much to shape veterinary medicine in this country. What do you see as the future of the profession?
Obviously, the profession has changed a great deal. Challenges are big. Everyone has sort of regrouped. COVID made us remote learners and things like that. So the challenges are big right now, but I believe the future is very, very bright. Realistic expectations, knowing what you're getting into in veterinary medicine is essential. Never losing these opportunities to learn and to connect and to deliver, to look at and be grateful for this opportunity. In our case, when we're involved with cattle, to be outside, to be on farms, and to be connected to an industry that's feeding the world. And as we look forward, we have so many more opportunities to keep our animals productive, to make profitability for the dairy farmers something that's real, and to have extraordinary welfare efforts made on behalf of the cows we serve.
Your love of dairy cows and the people who care for them has been evident throughout your career, Dr. McGurk. How lucky we are that you didn't choose to be a professional athlete, but rather you've chosen to invest your talents in the veterinary medicine field. And we're glad that that brought you to Madison, Wisconsin and to World Dairy Expo. We look forward to seeing you at World Dairy Expo 2024 when we celebrate the Golden Age, October 1 through 4 in Madison, Wisconsin. Thanks again for being our guest on The Dairy Show.
It's been a pleasure, Lisa. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Dairy Show. We hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget to hit like and subscribe wherever you are listening to us today. And of course, don't forget to tell your friends about how much you are enjoying The Dairy Show. We would love to have them join us as well. And last but not least, if you have any comments for us, send us an email at wde@wdexpo.com. We would love to hear from you.